Hello, everyone listening. Thank you for joining and welcome to Creative Empathy, where we are cultivating empathy through sharing creative lifestyles. My name is Jordan, and today we are headed off road, so to speak, to talk with painter Heather Friedel. Whether this is your first time listening or you're coming back for more, thank you so much for being here. And as before, I hope you're ready and passionate to hear from people who are passionate about what they do. So, while this intro is still under a minute, let's get to it. Thank you everyone for joining. Today I will be interviewing Heather Friedel. She is a painter and artist from Waterloo in Ontario. She has an Instagram page where you can order commissions. You can head on over there. We'll have links in the description. I think podcasts have descriptions, right? In the show notes. I think it's show notes. So you've been painting since for a long time, it looks like.
I've been drawing since forever. I think my first sketchbook technically was the first time that my family went on a road trip together, which is when we went to the East Coast when I was in grade 7. That would have been like a long time ago.
2008.
Yeah, 2008, 2009. So we went to the East Coast and I had a little spiral bound sketchbook from like Dollarama, and I was so impressed with the rocks and the moonlight shining over the water and everything we were seeing that I just couldn't help but draw it.
Yeah.
And then the first time I really, like, that sketchbook was just also like me doodling in the car because I was bored. But then when my family went to Arizona when I was in grade 10, so that would have been 2012, 9 years ago, I had like a dedicated sketchbook, just a little pocket-sized one, but it was just for all the things that I saw. And it started out as like a journal with pictures in it, but then the pictures got larger and larger. And I started using my pencil crayons to color them in. And then as time went on, each trip we went on, I would bring more art supplies and beg my family to let us sit down and let me sketch so we wouldn't be walking around all the time. I just wanted to capture all the really cool things we were seeing, you know, all the animals and the mountains and the rivers and lakes and the oceans, because, I don't know, we live in a really beautiful world.
That's really inspirational. That's awesome. That's such a good, like, such an optimistic viewpoint. So you got a bachelor's in architecture?
Yeah.
Is that a bachelor's?
Yeah. So I graduated with a bachelor's of architecture last August. It was a 4-year with co-op program, so 5 years. And during that program, I learned a lot about the creative process and, you know, taking critique.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't visual arts focused at all. I did get to do a little bit of drawing, but mostly it's, you know, you're designing buildings and whatnot. Exactly.
So is that engineering involved as well?
Architecture, I found, is mostly about communication. It's project management and communication and a little bit of design creativity.
That's interesting.
Which, you know, our buildings need to be built, so that, you know, architecture is important and all that.
That's a great fact. Buildings need to be built.
Yeah. But yeah, my passion really is about just observing and like listening and watching. And so as an architect, you're an agent of change. You're looking at the empty lot and you're saying, what can I build here? How can I influence the city? And as an artist, I look at the empty lot and I go, I love the way the shadow falls across the fire escape.
Perfect.
And I really want to draw that. I don't want to change it. I want to draw it. I just want to listen to the city and observe it.
Yeah.
And so whenever I was on co-op or whenever I was living in a different place for school, I would always just, you know, go around with the city with my sketchbook and record, you know, all the little interesting moments that the city has. You know, all the people in the city have their own lives and the little marks they make on the world. You know, when a building is initially built, it's very pristine and perfect and every bit of it is the same exactly as it was planned. But then as people live in it, the buildings all change and become individual.
Yeah. I was reading up about, when I looked at your Instagram, I was looking at some of the plein air painting. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, or plein air.
Plein air, yeah. And one of the things that you mentioned in one of your posts was talking about how one particular painting you
drew in the shadows first, noted where the shadows were, and then painted everything else as quickly as possible. And then when the shadows had changed, you had photo reference as well, so you could go back in and finish it up from the photo reference. So that's the kind of techniques you have to employ to capture that still moment in a transient world. So to some extent you're fighting against the time of day and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. Like especially transitioning from winter to summer. In the winter, a lot of times I'll just be doing still lifes, and I'll be working where I have my easel set up, which has like a nice north facing window, and the light is basically the same from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. because it's winter and the days end really early. But in the summer, you basically got day chunks in an hour or near sunset in like 15-minute chunks. And beyond that time, you have to kind of rely on your visual memory of what happened, or you just have to paint really quickly. And it's just a race against time to get that captured. And I mean, I think I always feel like when I'm going for a walk and I see something really beautiful, like, if I wasn't here right now, this beautiful thing would still exist, but I wouldn't have seen it. And I am here right now, and I did see it, and I think it's something that I want to show to other people, because I'm here alone by myself, and no one else would ever have the opportunity to see this unless I bring it a piece of it back with me.
It sounds like for you, we talked earlier about, before the recording, we talked about your, how you started off, where you, you know, your first experiences with drawing while on trips and stuff. And it sounds like you developed an eye for seeing the world and it's seeing experiences through the canvas, through a piece of paper and a pencil.
Yeah, no, that is pretty much exactly how I would experience it with you. It's with a camera, with me, it's with a sketchbook. Yeah. And just seeing, you know, mountains and lakes and rivers on family trips across Canada and in the States as well. And just, I needed to record those because I thought, you know, especially because, you know, these trips happened when I was a little younger, and everything you see that's new when you're younger is just the next wonderful thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just beautiful.
It's really awesome. I've personally developed that like desire for capturing things to the extent of like wanting to make a book out of some of the stuff that I've captured, especially over quarantine. Like quarantine, I bought a small camera finally and went out shooting a bunch of stuff when it was safe, and really enjoyed the process of documenting, in my case, Montreal while it was in lockdown. So what was a part of architecture that you enjoyed?
Enjoyed? As I said, like learning about the creative process, learning about how to... In high school, we didn't have a lot of very structured projects. Like we had a couple in our class where it was like, you have the entire year to do three projects, self-directed, go, basically. And, you know, that was fun in terms of like learning how to figure out, you know, what it is you want to actually make, and then like figuring out how to make that. But then it was a lot more rigorous in university. You know, now you need to find precedents, now you need to present your initial proposal to the professors and your classmates, now you need to have feedback on it, now you need to refine your proposal. So that kind of project management and learning how to learn. I most university courses will have this.
Yeah.
But learning how to say, this is what I need to do to push my project forward, and here's how I'm going to find the resources to do that. One thing that makes me feel like I stand out, maybe in a, not in a good way or bad way, just in a neutral way, is just that I have a lot of interests in terms of mediums that I work in.
I noticed a few of those, yeah.
Yeah, so some people, they will pick a medium that they like, say watercolors or oil painting or digital art, and say, I really like this. This is my primary medium. And I've worked in pastel. That's one of the things that I really like, but I've also done oil painting and acrylic painting and gouache and digital art. And there's so many different ways you can approach digital art, from like literally just painting on the digital canvas to working at it in layers as illustrations. Yeah. And every time I switch a medium, you know, there's cross-pollination where you learn something from one medium and apply it to another.
Yeah.
Or it's not just mediums, it's also subject matter. So there are things that are super obvious to portrait painters that aren't as obvious to plein air painters, super obvious to plein air painters that aren't as obvious to graphic designers. Right. And all these different skills that you pick up in one area and then I apply it to another area. And just that act of saying, oh, well, I learned this in one area and I'm going to apply it. And, oh, that really worked for me.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a way of being self-taught where the teachers that I'm listening to, like through like online videos and stuff like that and books, they don't know that they're teaching me something for a totally different medium. That's where I'm going to end up applying it. But yeah, that's something that I think we did a lot of in architecture school, just in terms of being immersed in a creative environment. You pull tips and techniques from unexpected places sometimes.
Right. So in architecture, I'm imagining you're focused on the shape and the lines and such before you start thinking in materials.
No.
No.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Materials, ideally, depending on who you ask, materials should inform the shape, right?
Yes.
You can only make certain structures in concrete. That's why people choose concrete. You can only make certain structures in wood. That's why people choose wood. Some people choose to make their concrete look like wood, or their wood look like concrete, or their metal look like, you know, and it's become much more in style now to just let your buildings express honesty, like through their materials.
Okay.
My materials are what they are, and they're going to be proud of it.
You're not trying to hide them.
Yeah, you're not trying to pretend that there's something they're not.
Okay.
And the craftsmanship of buildings, just letting the details align in a pleasant way.
Yeah.
As opposed to in like an ad hoc way where it's just like, oh, I guess I'll just put this at this height because I can reach that high. You know, I felt like, but I think, I mean, the very first thing you start with is not even just how the building looks, but what the building does, you know, where is the program? How many people are in it? What kind of spaces does it need to have? What kind of setbacks does it need to have?
Right.
So
it's the composition of the building, essentially, to some extent, but in a 3D volumetric way.
Yeah. And a lot of it is a lot more driven by necessity than it is by aesthetics. But then it's necessity shaped by aesthetics in the sense that, well, there are an unlimited amount of options or a seemingly unlimited amount of options. And you do have to pick one at a certain point and you have to justify why you picked that option.
Right. How have you found materials kind of equates to mediums and like canvases, I guess. Do you call a canvas a medium in painting?
A support.
A support, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like how do you change your... How does it change what you paint?
How do I select which medium based on my subject?
Or vice versa.
I mean, usually I'll select my subject first. Okay.
Okay.
So my current rule of thumb is if it's a commission usually, or if it's something I'm working on in the studios, aka at home, I'll try to do it in oil.
Yeah. As we talked about before, oil is just more appealing, especially for like marketing side of things.
Yeah, for
like
commissions and stuff. For larger paintings as well. There's no way I could do some of the sizes of oil paintings I've done in any other medium just because of... Well, I could have done it with acrylic, but I don't like acrylic. So I have, once I got my oil paints, I put my acrylics in a box and I put them away. Yeah. So I started painting oils on cotton canvas, which is what you can usually get in stores. But I actually ordered a roll of linen canvas for myself. And linen canvas is slipperier.
Okay.
The paint adheres to it a little bit differently and soaks into it a little bit differently. Okay. And so I've been really enjoying trying that out. Okay. Then pastels I will take with me when I'm out and about. They're pretty heavy, but then I've also, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, used gouache sometimes, especially as a little bit of a bridge between pastels and oil paints, because I do need to really get a handle on color mixing. So one of the differences between pastels and other mediums is that with pastels, you generally require a color of pastel for every color of thing you want in your drawing. And you can blend them slightly, but the closer of color that you actually have, the better. And so when you're looking at a scene, I'm constantly asking myself, what color is this really? And I remember, I have a distinct memory. I don't know what grade I was in, maybe 10, somewhere around there, and looking out in the backyard at the trees and really asking myself, like, what color are they? You know, are they actually green? Or maybe there's a bit purple in them because they're in shadow. And then being like, epiphany. Wow.
Yeah.
There's actually like different colors that I didn't expect inside of things. And pastels really let me explore that, because you don't have to worry about color mixing or anything like that at all. You're just worried about looking at your box of pastels and looking at the thing in front of you and saying, okay, how can I use the colors I have to describe this thing?
Right.
And then wet medias are sort of the opposite, because you're always mixing your paints. And so, yes, you can buy different tubes, like, of different pigments, and different pigments will mix different colors for you. But with the basic three colors, or six, because you should have a warm and cool of each of the primaries, technically.
Okay.
You can pretty much mix most of your colors if you're trying to do it quickly, like on location or whatever.
Okay.
And so just learning how to mix the colors that I needed to mix was just like a totally different skill that I needed to learn. But the fact that you can mix any colors with oil paint, basically, whereas I couldn't really do that with acrylics, because acrylics dry so quickly that you're basically building it up in layers instead.
Yeah, you don't have working time.
Yeah. And so just the freedom to sit for half an hour and just mix paint with oils, like, and it won't dry out, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's rules that you need to follow. Like, you need to put your transparent pigments, you know, separate your brushes. So one brush is using transparent pigments, this one is using opaque pigments. And then don't add any whites until the end, because the whites will make everything look dull and muddy. So, like, there's rules sort of that way. So then I will, when I'm out and about, I'll usually have one colored medium with me. If nothing else, it's just pencil crayons, something to make colors with. And then I'll usually, if I'm really pressed for time, I'll have my sketchbook and just a pencil and a pen. And even that, like, I really liked, before the whole pandemic happened.
Yeah, it's okay.
I liked sketching people on buses, you know,
and at
bus stations and whenever I was traveling. It just, you know, it helps keep you loose to just be sketching people,
you know,
going about their days.
Always looking for composition, always looking for interesting shapes and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whenever I happen to be walking around with someone else, I'd be like, if I was by myself, I would stop right now and I would say, like, look at the way the shadow is falling, and then it starts reflecting the sky or starts reflecting the other building, and it's just really pretty, and I just appreciate that.
Yes, that's very true. What are some of the pieces that you've done recently that you're particularly, like, proud of, I guess, or some of the ones that stand out, some standout pieces that you've painted?
So I guess getting into large oil paintings was really interesting.
Yeah.
So I did one piece that was 3 feet by 1 foot on canvas. It was a picture that I took when my family went on a trip to Newfoundland.
Right.
We were in this cove, and it was sunrise, and the sun was just coming over the rocks and hitting them and lighting up all the houses in their colorful paint jobs.
Yeah.
And the lighthouse at the end of the peninsula. And so, yeah, I painted that last fall. And it was, at the time, the largest painting I'd ever done. And I was really proud of it. I'm still really proud of it.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of larger commissions since then. And recently, I went out to Calgary and took some photos. And hopefully, I will be able to turn some of those into paintings.
Ooh.
Because rocks are my love.
Oh,
I can't get enough of rocks and mountains.
Yes.
Yep. Ever since I saw mountains for the first time, I'm like, this is my heart. This is where it is.
Yep.
So, yeah, my brother was actually making fun of me, because we went to stay in this hotel and there was this lake and this mountain scenery, and everyone's taking photos like of the lakes and the mountains reflecting in the lake. And I turned 90 degrees and I looked at the water tower just sitting in front of a different mountain, and I was like, that's it. That's the scene I want to paint.
That's with the one.
Water tower, not the lake. That's too cliche for me.
Yeah, exactly.
But just something spoke to me about the way that the rocks were kind of rippling as they were like pushed around by the tectonic plates and all that.
That's cool.
And the trees just kind of like toothpicks along the ridge line, and then the clouds coming up behind those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Sometimes you see a scene and it just speaks to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges that keeps me driving forward in my art journey is not being able to paint things. Looking at a scene and saying, I want to be able to paint that, and trying, or taking a photo of it, I'm saying the camera cannot capture this.
Yeah.
At least my skill with the camera can't capture this. Maybe yours would. But I take a photo of it and I look at the photo and I go, that's not how I feel about this place.
Yeah.
And then I need to try to paint it. And if it doesn't work, then I need to improve my skills or try again and continue until I can express how I feel about this place.
Right. So for you, for sure, the brush and the canvas are a much better tool, much more superior tool for expressing how you feel about a scene. Well, I guess back to rocks. what was that a recent discovered love, or like was there a particular rock that really challenged you?
Well, I would say out of all the trips, I mean, it's hard to go anywhere in North America and not see rocks unless you're, say, in Ontario.
Fair.
Which is where I live. The very first trip I went on with my family out east, we went to like Peggy's Cove with the lighthouse and the rocks there.
Oh, okay.
And then we went to my aunt's place, or aunt, second aunt, someone who was related to us.
Yeah.
We went to her place, and there was the moon setting over the water with just the pebbles on the beach, and I don't know, that image really stuck with me, and I was drawing it in my sketchbook. And then
yeah.
We went to Arizona, man, those red rocks.
Yeah.
I was in love. It's just so different from where we are now, and it's so like strong and vital and bold, like they're just blue sky, red rocks.
Wow.
That's all you see. And just seeing it from the airplane as we were landing in Arizona, the shadows, these big, long shadows cast by these rock formations. Yeah, so then even when my family went out west and we saw all these waterfalls in the Rockies, and I didn't have a camera at that point, so I was telling my mom, take a picture of that waterfall, take a picture of that waterfall. Yeah, and so one of my favorite co-ops when I was in architecture was in Victoria, BC, and they don't quite have the Rockies there because it's on Vancouver Island, but they do have a lot of the same types of kind of ground out smooth boulders everywhere with moss growing on them and dappled light from the trees, and I couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I bet.
Reminded me of Muskoka, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love Muskoka too, but I don't get up there as often.
No, I feel. So rocks with lichen or nah?
Both. They're just... Rocks to me are like how some people love drawing the human figure. Like...
That's cool, yeah.
They are so... They have so many different forms, and they have so much movement sometimes, and they change throughout the day as the sun passes over them. And unlike trees, like trees sometimes kind of meld together into this kind of blob of green if you're looking at a forest, and that's not as appealing to me, but just, you know, all the rock like breaking through the earth and saying, I'm here and I've been here for thousands of years, and...
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the way you can, I imagine the way you can, like, I don't know if you've done a lot of work with, like, atmospherics and, like, atmospheric haze, seeing, like, you know, the, like, fog rolling in and stuff, being able to layer rocks like that. Sure, the haze does reduce the detail as you get deeper in it, but I know the angle of rocks, the hard lines, you know, the definite end to them is really satisfying to see in depth and really helps sell the depth of an image. Is the emotion of being in a place, is it necessary? How is it necessary for you to paint something?
I mean, that's a really interesting question. I mean, as an artist, you would think, oh, you can be a master of your emotions and just paint all the time because you love painting.
Oh.
I mean, which is true to some extent. Like,
yeah.
If I haven't painted in a while, or if I've just been doing other tasks for a few days, and I go out and I start sketching, like, my first couple sketches will be like, and then I'll get into it and I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember why I love this.
Yeah.
But then there's definite moments, especially when you travel, you're in a state of heightened emotion usually, just because of the stress of traveling and the excitement of seeing new things. And maybe I don't do my best paintings, like technically speaking, but I feel the strongest emotions. And sometimes you can walk past something like a light post or a garbage can and you won't feel anything about it.
Yeah.
But then you'll be in a state of heightened emotions and you'll walk past that same thing and you'll be like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen for this reason. And then I'll say to myself, you know, I really love just the way that these two elements play off of each other. You know, the puddle of light cast by the street lamp, you know, and the way it kind of glints off the fence there. And I'll have to sit down and draw because just it speaks to me, but also it wouldn't have spoken to me if I hadn't been in that state at that particular moment that I saw it.
Yeah. So timing of things. I read on Instagram that you painted a particularly beautiful sunset and you started off that post with, I'm a sunset person. So does time of day affect the way that you like pick to paint something or?
100%. As I said, yes, I am a sunset person. I'm not an early bird. If I was an early bird, I'd probably also be a sunrise person. But in the summer, you have to kind of pick one of the above because sunrise is so early. So my bedroom for the past 10 years has faced north, west-ish. So I've seen the sunsets over the farmer's field. And that's, I mean, aside from traveling, that is one of the things that made me need to learn to draw because I saw the sunset over the farmer's fields and the barns and the trees and the pond. And I said, I can't just let that pass me by. And the spring peepers coming out and so just having experience with a particular time of day as I see more sunsets or more dusk times, it doesn't make them any less impactful. It just makes me appreciate the variety of them.
Yeah.
I think. I definitely do not like partially cloudy days because then I'm painting something and it goes into shade and then it goes into sun and then it goes into shade and no. And I do not like times of day when the sun is casting flat shadows, like around noon.
Yeah.
So typically, if I'm going out to sketch, it'll be during those early or late hours.
Yeah.
In the winter, we tend to have more clearness in the morning, like more predictability in the morning in terms of clear days.
Exactly.
So in the winter, sometimes I'll do a lot of morning drawings, and then you sometimes get really nice sunsets in the summer. Plus the sun is out later.
Yeah.
And then during the middle part of the day, I'll be working on more like longer term or like studio type paintings.
Yeah. I saw, and you've mentioned a few times that like you take photos or get photos from anybody that you can get photos of something when you've experienced it, and you'll take them back to the studio and work on stuff. How do you decide when it's like time to go back to the studio and do something there or do it in one session right in one spot?
For one thing, I think it depends on how long the effects last. And also, as I said, like there are some things that I personally can't capture in pastels just because the colors are too deep or the details are too precise for pastels. So in that case, I would have to just do as many good sketches as I can and take some reference photos and go back to the studio. I mean, part of it is my time outside doesn't always result in longer term paintings, and that's okay because this is my time outside is my time for me to just sit and listen and unwind, hopefully.
Hopefully.
As long as I don't get frustrated, which it depends on how much pressure I'm putting myself on this particular day. Yeah, so going around to the forest or the lakes and ponds, I love finding bits of water because I love reflections and I love seeing the sunlight kind of hit the bottom of the water. And so typically if I'm going out to sketch something around here, like near where I live in Waterloo, I will plan to only do just a day sketch or for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's when I've really traveled, traveled on my co-ops, traveled with my family, that I literally don't have time when I'm traveling to do it. And I'm seeing such grand big things that you can't paint them small. You have to paint them big.
Yeah.
So then those are definitely the reference photos I take back.
Is there a part of, or what part of painting, frustrates you the most?
Frustrates me the most.
Besides trees.
Well, frustrates. See, frustrates is an interesting word because, part of me will, I think I find myself divided in half when I'm painting, and half of me looks at my painting and says, this isn't working. You know, this part isn't working yet. Needs to be fixed, et cetera, et cetera. And then, but the thing is I've completed enough paintings to know that every painting goes through a bad stage. Yeah. You hate it.
Yeah.
Especially the big ones.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just love every stage of a large painting. You have to go through a stage where it's not working to get to the stage where it is. And so I've kind of tend to detach myself a little bit. I mean, if you ask my family members, they might say that Heather gets slightly more emotional than I'm expressing here. But I feel a little bit detached. Like, I will have my frustrated moments, but then I'll say, I'm frustrated because it's not finished yet. I'm frustrated because I'm not finished yet. I'm not finished developing as an artist. And that's okay. I will just make every painting as good as I can.
Yeah.
And so I'll just put it away and then I'll come back to it. And I'll say, okay, you don't know, now it's a new bit. It's a new day. I've got a new mindset. Maybe I'll put it away for even longer, a week or a month, until I don't want to stab it with a knife anymore. And then as long as it doesn't get stabbed with a knife in the meantime, you know,
you're good.
I put it where I can't see it.
Yep.
And then I bring it out again and then we're good.
Okay.
I can keep working on it. And I can appreciate the parts that were not bad. I feel like, you know what? That passage is actually good. And this passage is not as bad as I thought it was. And it can be fixed if I do this, this, and this.
Right. Yeah.
So, those longer term frustrated moments. But then there's also the wave of, I want to be better than I am.
Mm.
And, you know, that comes in waves too, because, you know, you'll go through a period of, you know, a couple months where I'm happy, or at least I've tried something new and it turned out better than I thought it was. And I'm happy with my skill because it turned out better than I thought it was. And then I'll put my expectations up and then I'll try again, but now my expectations don't meet my skill because I put my expectations up, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm like, well, that's my own fault for putting my expectations up.
It's the danger of ambition. You can be ambitious and push yourself, but it's also dangerous because you can get caught in this trap of, I'm not a good enough artist to do any of the things I want to do.
Yeah. And so that's where I find just having a history of looking back at my old, being able to look back at my old art and saying, you know what? At the time that I did this art, I thought it was great, and now I see how I could have improved. And at the time that I did this art, I thought it was terrible, but now I see how good it is. And so when you have a longer history to look back on, the highs and lows don't seem quite as high and low, because you see how you've gone through those periods before.
That's good, yeah. How often do you go back to old art to give it a look for whatever reason?
Not too often. I mean, whenever someone would ask me about it, like when you asked me about this interview, I looked at all my old sketches. You know, if I'm cleaning files on my desktop for like digital art, you know, every couple months or whatever. Or even when I'm working on a particular project and I look at like my initial sketches or something, I'm like, you know what, there was some emotion or truth to that initial sketch, and I'm appreciating that right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let myself appreciate that and let myself celebrate my victories.
That's good. That's really healthy, healthy way to look at your own artwork, to keep yourself going and remind yourself that, like, the artist who can simultaneously say this was good and this was bad, that ability that you were talking about earlier, that you learned in a architecture school, the ability to receive critique but also critique your own work, is huge. I know in VFX we have to do tech checks. We have to be able to check our work before we submit it, and I was always terrified of tech checking because I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to fix the things that I found were broken. But getting over the fear of that and saying, no, if it's broken, then I can attempt to fix it. And especially as a junior, you know, if you can't fix it, there's always someone above you that you can go to. Do you have any other artist friends that you go to when you're, if you're ever stuck on an art piece?
Not as many as I'd like.
I feel you there.
Especially with this whole pandemic. Yes. One of my brothers is, I mean, I have three brothers and they're all very nice, but one of my brothers in particular, will come up to me and he'll say, like, how's it going? How's this painting coming? You know, I noticed you've changed this since last time, and how That's do you cool. feel about it right now? And so he's very, good at helping me articulate how I feel and helping me articulate my own problems, because I'm a person who likes to talk through my problems and kind of figure things out that way.
Yeah. Are you an external processor?
Yeah. Like, I need a listening ear sometimes.
That's cool. Yeah.
And so there's also like Discord channels where I've got like an art group, and a couple of friends on Instagram that I chat with where I can send work and get feedback. And I've been trying to be diligent about actually doing that and not just feeling frustrated and being like, no, I can figure it out myself.
I feel that so much. Has there been anything recently or in the past that's troubled you about painting in regards to whether it's business side of things, whether it's you know, keeping on top of trends, or being true to yourself as an artist, you know, as people often say? Has anything like that come between you and the desire to paint?
No, I mean, ever since, I don't know, I can remember, it's I'm doing this because I want to and not because people around me are doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm also young enough in my art journey that I don't have to, you know, some artists will say, oh, you know, I've got this brand now, I can't break out of it because my followers don't expect me to.
Yeah.
And I don't have a brand yet, so I don't have that pressure at all.
Yeah.
I just have my ambitions.
Would you ever want that brand?
I would like to have a body of work.
That's fair.
And that body of work will probably be unified by the fact that I'm the one who made it.
Yeah.
And I do have certain things I like and things I will include in my art that other people probably wouldn't, because they're not me.
Yeah, exactly. Just by nature of individuality.
Yeah. And there's definitely, I mean, as I said, I'm young in all the things I still need to learn.
Yeah.
And sometimes I will see artists doing what they do and say, oh, you know, I should try that technique, or I should, you know, try painting a scene similar to that, or I really like the way they did their colors, and I'll just take kind of the idea of what I've observed, obviously not like copying it,
yeah,
but just being inspired by other people. And as you accrue experience, especially in terms of physical things like pastel, like I've done quite a few pastel drawings now.
Yeah, I saw.
So there are so many techniques that I use that I've picked up from so many different places that no one else, because I haven't learned from just one source, my drawings are a collection of my history and experience. And yeah, that's something that no one else has.
Exactly, yeah.
And not to mention being a glimpse of my places, like yeah, the places that I spend my time and the things that I see and the time that I'm living in.
Yeah.
So
all of these things build up to a completely unique and individual, not only body of work, but way of working, and thus a different result.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a particular skill that you've, or technique that you really enjoy doing? Aside from rocks, not a subject.
Well, that's more of the subject matter. A particular skill I really enjoy doing. I think I would need to have a larger body of work to appreciate that about myself, especially in terms of large finished paintings.
Fair.
Which I don't know much. I really, like currently especially, I really enjoy contre-jour, which is like into the light scenes. Contre-jour, is that contre-jour? What it's called?
I don't know. I've never heard of it. Can you explain what that is?
It's just, I'm pretty sure that's a right word. Please edit this out if it's not the right word. where basically you're sitting somewhere and instead of the light casting, you know, a subject from the side or something so that, you know, they're well-defined by it, it's casting them from behind. So, like, if it was a person, you'd see the outline of their hair all, like, lit up.
Right? Yeah.
And so there was one painting on my Instagram that I did recently where there's like the bulrushes are all lit up from the back.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And so I really like how when you're painting things and the light is coming from that way, it really makes things very intense, especially leaves.
High contrast at that point.
Yeah, when leaves are a very great study in color theory.
Yeah.
When leaves are in shadow, they're dark in value. When leaves are in light, they're very bright in value, but low in intensity. And when the sunlight's passing through them because they're translucent, they're very high in intensity.
Interesting.
And not as quite as high in value as when the sun is reflecting off of the top of them and you're seeing them from the top.
Okay.
And I just like that high intensity moment.
Yeah.
And trying to articulate that is difficult because you'll sometimes end up just making the whole painting high intensity.
Yeah.
And, you know, a thimble full of red is worth more than a bucket full. So you've got to kind of have that in moments so that it really stands out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I've really found myself selecting, I would say, as a subject.
That's cool. In photography, like, I just call that backlighting.
Backlighting,
yeah. Contre-jour, very good, very good fine
French
art term.
I don't know.
Fine art term, it's fine. Backlighting is beautiful because it starts to probe an object for translucency.
Yes.
And especially, I saw some of your paintings of still life onions, especially some quite a few paintings.
Translucency of onions.
It's very, like, I have to say, like, you're talking about like leaves being good color theory practice. Your ability to choose color. I mean, we were talking about when you use pastels, you kind of have to just like pick a color that represents all. You kind of need that color in a pastel. You can't just mix it. Your ability to choose colors is incredible. I was looking at one of the ones you drew. You painted of an area like this, like that we're in right now. With I don't know the name of the plant. It might be the bulrushes. And there was like some depth to it going off into the distance. The way you'd picked the colors from the far to the close, I felt like if I squinted, it would be perfectly real. I'd be looking at the original scene. Your ability to pick the colors that represent things at the right distances and like complementing each other is like almost flawless to my eyes.
Oh.
And you know, then you get the joy of, for me, the joy of paintings in particular is leaning in and looking at all of the details in the texture and in the canvas and in the impasto and stuff like that, the brush strokes. That's so fun because you start seeing like the impressionistic side of things, but the colors are perfectly real, and I don't know, I love it. There's something almost otherworldly about it.
Yeah, no, that's like 100% what I'm going for. I remember when I was in high school, we had to pick a artistic movement and write a report about it. And I wanted to do either realism or hyperrealism, and those two were already picked. So I had to do impressionism, and I wasn't very happy. But then I researched impressionism, and I was so impressed. Like, after researching them, it wasn't until I researched them. But then once I understood them, I was like, I need to try this.
Yeah.
And I, ever since then, I've been very cognizant of how the impressionists work, and not trying to emulate them like blindly, but color. When you have the right color, you don't need to have the right shape. That
Perfect.
Was the
yeah.
impressionist's motto, basically. That's why all their paints are little smudges. They're just the right color. And exactly what you said, when you lean in, you see the brush strokes, and then you step away and you see the scene, and then you lean in and then you step away and then you lean in. And And it's so fascinating to see, like, when I go to art galleries and I see masterfully done paintings like that, I'm like, this is what I want to be able to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I see, and it's so inspiring to me to see other artists, you know, doing yeah. this and then trying to do it myself. And sometimes, I mean, especially if I'm doing a scene and I'm really in the moment, I'm just really focused. I'm not even looking at my canvas, I'm just looking at the thing I'm looking at, the actual subject, and I'm just putting the colors down. Just it's almost like meditative, like yeah. just seeing and applying the colors. Yeah.
What is next for you with all this painting stuff?
Painting stuff. Well. Learning, continuing to being self-taught, so that's ongoing.
Yeah.
Trying to put myself out there a little bit more, especially as things are opening up again.
Yeah.
Physically, maybe printing out postcards to put into gift shops.
Oh yeah.
In St. Jacobs and whatnot. Maybe trying to put some of my paintings into galleries.
Yep.
I have to go out to the galleries and talk to the gallery owners and be personable.
Yes. Yes. Trying to become a local artist.
Yes. I also, this Waterloo is not the, is the cheapest place to live because I can live at home, but yeah. it's not the most inspiring place in terms of there's no mountains. For me, that's what I really like. So
you need to go to Vancouver.
So I need to go back out west. I need to find somewhere to live and go out west. So that might happen eventually. In the meantime, I accept the fact that even if I went right now out west, I would probably not have the skills yet to be able to realize my vision.
Yeah.
So I'm okay to just continue learning and teaching myself. I'm also learning a lot through digital art right now as well.
Are you doing digital painting?
Digital painting, yeah, nice. On my tablet. So I'm learning a lot about visual memory and color theory and composition and just being able to try things out super, super quickly digitally that I wouldn't be able to do physically. And there's just the different techniques that digital artists use that physical artists don't use and stuff like that. I have such a bad visual memory.
Yeah, like a visual library, is that what you mean?
Yeah, visual library. Just, I can see things and draw them. And one of the reasons why I can do that is because my visual library doesn't get in the way because I'm not visualizing it. I'm just copying it with my arm. It doesn't go through my brain.
Yeah.
And so trying to paint things from my imagination it makes me look like I don't know how to paint, but it helps me learn because now I know a lot more about, for example, color theory than I did before because I'm having to remember and visualize from my memory what things looked like.
Yeah.
And so that's been very, a new avenue, but helpful for me.
And that's why I was asking about, the emotional nature of, the emotionally driven painting, when you're in a location and you're there and you take a reference photo, it's very different because you get to begin the painting in the location. And even if you leave and go and paint it in the studio, you're painting from reference, yes, but you were there. So you have, to some extent, a memory of it. Does that change when you haven't been to the place and you just look at a image on Google Images or something, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And so I find there's two extremes. One is I'm literally in a place and I have a strong feeling about it and I want to paint it.
Yeah.
And that's my happy place.
That's a good place to be, yeah.
And then the other extreme is I've read a passage in a book, like a fantasy novel of a landscape or something, and I have a strong feeling about that. And obviously I can't just go there because it's in a book. Mm. I've just read a description of it, but I can find little snippets of reference photos of different, a time of day, maybe some scenery, maybe some furniture, whatever is in the scene, the characters, and try to make an image that reflects my imagination in that sense.
Yeah.
The middle ground between those things is when I have a commission and my client has a strong feeling about the place, but I don't. I've never been there. And I have to cobble together some statement about this place that I've never been to.
Right.
And I'm only working from a single reference image or maybe a couple. But it's so, yeah. So I don't have my own strong opinions about it. When I visit a place, that's the thing that I really take away from it is saying what I'm going to highlight in this painting is, it's the, you know, the verticality of the reeds against the horizontality of the shadows or something specific. So that has been a learning experience.
That's
for
cool.
For learning how to respond to commissions in a way that I get a good, well, me and the client both enjoy the painting that comes out of it.
Exactly, yeah. And like, obviously, like learning on the job and learning with experience, being self-taught, that's a really good place. I remember when I got into VFX, there was like one book about compositing that existed from this one guy, and everyone learned from it. But like the rest of us who didn't want to pay the $80 to get it because we were cheapskates and just wanted to, also maybe didn't want to read, maybe that was part of it. But we just learned from YouTube tutorials. And then once you get into the actual industry, you get in on the production floor, you throw out everything you've learned, and it becomes like starting from scratch. Are there any books that you particularly enjoy and like really felt helped you progress in your painting?
Do I have any recommendations? I don't have any titles with me. Put them into the description.
I will.
No affiliate links. Not sponsored.
Not sponsored by any of these authors.
Yeah. There's one book about landscape painting that I got a long time ago.
Yep.
And it had a lot of examples, but it also talked about like how to break down the composition into like a value sketch.
Yeah.
And how to... No, everything else escapes me. But that...
That was one skill that you remember
from it.
That
was one skill. No, I took that skill and I ran with it. And that was part of my sketchbooks for a long time after
that. That's cool. Yeah.
And examples of basically how to interpret the landscape you see into a composition that works. And which composition works. Like, how do compositions work? And why do they work? And like just tracing the line that your eye follows with the composition.
Yeah.
Like there was a book that I got from the library recently that literally had like student, teacher, and then the teacher would like go in and say, okay, if you fixed this about your artwork, the composition would look better.
Ooh.
You know, if you put a plant here on the right side, or just increase the intensity of this area just slightly where the focal point is.
Yeah.
And it was like spot the differences because they were so subtle, but they made the paintings turn from good into masterful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was interesting. There was a book, there was this Cape Cod School of Painting, and I got two books by former students of the school, because they were in the bookstore, and I love bookstores. And basically, they were talking about how to see light and color, and they were like, don't use your paintbrush, use your palette knife, because you're not worried about shape, you're just worried about color.
Ooh, that's
and I was
good.
Like, I don't like my palette knife, I'm going to... Maybe ignore that suggestion, but I'll keep it in my mind.
Yeah, challenged to make friends with your with something you don't like as much.
I don't like my best villain. But anyway, and that was, you know, they challenged my expectations on how I see things, and basically, I really like books that are not just how to draw books or how to paint, like not just step-by-step tutorials, but how an artist taking me through their process and through their kind of what goes through their head as every stage. I chose, you know, I looked at the scene and I said, I won't paint, you know, this very flat picture of these trees on a hill because, you know, the composition wouldn't work. So I'm going to choose not to paint it and I'm going to turn in the other direction.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to come back at a different time of day because it'll work much better then. And just basically problem solving strategies.
Yeah, exactly.
Everywhere I go, I usually also try to pick up a book about like a local painter's artwork.
Yeah.
Like just paintings they've done over their life, maybe a bit of a biography, just to get a sense of, you know, some more Canadian artists than just the group of seven.
Yeah.
Group of seven are nice.
Yeah.
But in addition, there are lots of other Canadian artists, and in every place, there's usually a local bookstore will have some copies of some of their work, and I try to pick that up and learn from them.
Would you recommend these books? I know that you've like said you don't have the titles, but would you recommend reading for people or practicing by experience?
Yeah, experience. I would recommend, this is one of your questions. I saw it on the sheet.
There you go.
I would recommend take a sketchbook with you. Just go out with a sketchbook and sketch the things that you see. And don't worry, no one's staring at you.
That's good.
I actually really like when people come and talk to me, but I realize that not everyone does. It's not that often. And usually people just mind their own business. But just sketch in public. Sketch the things you see. Sketch the places you are in. And, you know, write notes about them and how you feel and stuff. And, yeah, that's my recommendation.
That's really good advice. Cool. All right. If you want to plug, go for it. Where can we find you? And where do you want people to go?
You can find me on Instagram at heatherly.art. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Heather, thank you so much for talking with us today, or with me. There are multiple people here, but you can't hear the other people. But thank you so much for your insight and your experience. It's seriously inspiring. And everyone listening, go check it out. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you've learned to be a bit more empathetic today. All right. Goodbye, everyone.